You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved. Leaving work in a mood? Time to change that with Overdrive.
You don't have a self-destruct button on that computer either, do you?
No.
That's what I'd be nervous about. Like that thing is just floating out in the ether. There's a Google search history that is in the hands of somebody else, and that can be very dangerous.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Bit of a tough commercial break for Al. I have a lot of appreciation. He helps me with my computer. I got a new computer today. He dialed in some things. And he took a rib shot from Hedge. That was just...
I do feel
she
terrible.
Might as well have...
That bursted his kidney.
Like she draggled him right in the nuts.
Yeah. Do you want to reveal what happened?
Well, We were talking about
regretting things during our heydays.
Right, regretting things, regretting maybe romances or whatever it was.
Basically waking up, opening up one eye and saying, yeesh.
Well, it all spawned from Bezos. Because Jeff Bezos is getting divorced.
He's a mutt.
Well, I don't know about that necessarily. The guy's the richest guy in the world.
Google him.
I understand. I know what he looks like, dude. I'm saying richest guy in the world. That's, I think that might be worth something.
Demi Moore in Indecent Proposals would have told him to shove it.
He's going to hand over his now estranged wife, reportedly like $70 billion in the divorce settlement.
B.
$70 billion.
B. Bezos with a B.
Bezos.
Billion with a B.
So anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
So anyways, O-Dog was like, well, we've all had one of those mornings where you wake up and you go, oh my goodness, I was really drunk last night. And I said, actually, I haven't. And then I was pressed on that. And then I said, well, I guess there was that one time when the guy was really short.
And Al's at a clip where he's, are you 5'2"?
I'm 5'5", thank you.
5'5". So Al's
dialed in at 5'5", and we were all kind of like...
Oh, and then I felt... And they all look at Al, and Al's got sweat on his brow, and then I feel awful. But then I said, Al, I'm almost 6 feet tall.
Like, right.
It's a big... If you're 5 feet tall, and a guy's 5'5", not a biggie. But if you're 6 feet tall and a guy's 5'5", it's just... It just doesn't work.
No, but Al's girlfriend is taller than him, so he's okay.
She's as tall as I am, and she's smart, and she's beautiful, and she is Italian, so you can't go wrong.
We love Al and everything that Al represents.
And if you're short out there, gentlemen...
Don't ever give up.
Don't ever
Jimmy
give
Valvano.
Up.
Jimmy Valvano.
That's
don't
right.
Don't ever give up.
Jimmy V Foundation. Do your thing. Mike Johnson is going to call in. We're going to call Mike Johnson here in a moment. Nick Nurse at 5:30. Johnny was on the lunch today with Gord Miller and Gino Retta. And they were spicing things up, man. They were yelling and screaming. It was actually very, very entertaining. And they got into the Mitch Marner, his agent. I don't have his name in front of me. But he was going back and forth with Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider, yesterday. And said that they have no interest in negotiating during the regular season. And Mitch's agent said that Marner just wants to focus on the season and they'll worry about it next summer.
Or December 1st.
Which is fine. You know, that's their
prerogative.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They don't have to do anything.
Darren Ferris, by the way, is...
Darren Ferris, that's his name. And, you know, now the connection is, okay, with Matthews. Is Matthews going to go first? Does Marner want to wait for him? Whatever. But what I took out of this whole story is... Kyle Dubas and his role in all this, because remember when we had Dubas in right after he got the job, he came in studio and we asked him, what did you learn? What was the ultimate lesson you learned from Lou Lamoriello?
Mm-hmm. I know the answer. If you have time, you use it.
Patience is never a bad thing. If you have time, use it.
What did patience do for him in that Nylander negotiation? I don't think it did a whole lot.
That's what I'm wondering. Has Dubas decided, you know what, Lou...
Cramped.
Yeah, what the hell are you talking about, Lou? Because that screwed me, because Nylander had me over a barrel, effectively, with 30 minutes to go before we had to sign a deal. But also, Dubas sat down with Pierre LeBrun a few weeks ago, and Pierre wrote this piece. And Dubas pointed out that what they do at the trade deadline is going to be affected by what happens with the contracts of these two players. Because Dubas said at the time he'd rather not a conventional rental. He'd rather bring on a player with some term. But in order to do that, you need to know what kind of numbers you're dealing with on the cap next year. So how can you be patient or feel as if, as Kyle Dubas said, if you have time, use it. When you've effectively told the media and everyone believes you want to get these deals done, like today.
ASAP.
By the way, Brian, so what's that's just here? One of the elements from working with Lou that he took with him. That's not his be-all or end-all. That's how I manage a hockey team. If I have time, use it.
That's the one thing he said he learned.
I know, but that's it's not like he said
it's not like he has to be married to it. I understand that. But he did say, he specifically said that. We asked him, what did you learn? If you have time, use it. Well, now it kind of feels like with Marner and Matthews, he'd prefer not to use that time. He wants to get the drop
on right
now.
Okay, if that they're not going to negotiate during the season, then you have no time to decide that. You're going to have to adjust that to trade deadline or whatever you want to do, not knowing what these players are going to do.
What would you do differently? He might have a different answer for that and say, you know what? I wouldn't have used all my time. Now, wasn't Tim Hunter, there was an article that came out with him recently talking about the whole Nylander thing, and of course, you know, 2020 to look back on these things, but he said they saw this coming and that he would have got this thing done when they did have the time back in the spring, which sort of seemed like where Dubas might have been going with this, trying to get these contracts done earlier rather than later instead of being over the barrel. But then Marner came out and said that he doesn't want to sign until Matthews signs now, right?
Well, I don't think that's on the record. That's just being reported as the belief that Marner would want Matthews
to
go first.
Explain to me why that helps Marner.
So that he knows the number, and then he can come back to him and say, well, I'm not $4 million less than him.
Right.
You know, so effectively, let's say
working
Matthews...
Working back from the highest paid.
Exactly. Just like Draisaitl. Yeah. McDavid went first, and Draisaitl said, I'm not taking $6 million less.
Yeah.
I'll take $4 million less, but I'm not taking $6 million. So, you know, it's the same thought process, I would think. Here's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. What's up, MJ?
What's going on, boys, ladies? How's everyone doing?
Well, we're doing very well.
Hey, MJ.
We're just trying to console our producer here. Hedge kicked him in the pills earlier, and we're trying to make him feel better.
He made a derogatory comment about short men. Realizing that Al was right beside me. He was bent over on a keyboard.
No, he wasn't. He was standing up.
He was on a box.
Shoot.
Yeah, he was actually taller than usual.
Yeah, you're a tall woman, though. You're 5'10".
This is my point. Yeah, this is a big deal for some guys. You know, they're leg guys, butt guys, breast guys. I'm a height girl.
You're a height girl.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Thank you.
To each their own.
You're an anti-heightite.
That's right. Yeah.
So we were talking. I was actually, we referenced you on the lunch today with Gord and with Gino. You guys were getting after it about contracts and Marner and Matthews. And, you know, I brought the Dubas angle into all this because Marner's agent, what's his name again?
Derek,
yes. Came out and told Pierre LeBrun that they don't have any interest in negotiating during the season. Marner wants to concentrate on the games at hand, and they're not going to negotiate during the season, which is fine. But that kind of appears to go against what Kyle Dubas would prefer. Yet, when we interviewed Dubas right after he got the gig, we asked him, what did you learn from Lou? And he said, I learned that if you have time, use it. Based on the Nylander circumstance, it kind of feels like Dubas has already evolved, and maybe he doesn't believe what Lou was telling him in the past. How do you feel about, you know, the timelines of all these contracts and where you see all this playing out?
Well, I think we can appreciate it from Kyle Dubas' standpoint, where the more information you have and the earlier you have it, the better off you're going to be. You can make more better educated decisions. If you're trying to allocate funds, if you're trying to bring in free agents, make trades, it'd be nice to know what your salary commitments will be going forward, including if you want to make moves, if you have to try to coerce Patrick Marleau to switching teams again, you'd like to know. So I get where he's coming from, but listen, it's good to want things, but you can't force guys to sign contracts, and I have no problem with Mitch Marner not making it easy for them. If he wants to hang in there, wait for Austin Matthews and say, listen, I'm going to put up 100 points, I'm going to lead the team in scoring, and I'll take my chances in the summer. I'm not worried about slowing down in the second half or any of that. I'll just try to maximize my dollars by waiting as long as I can. It makes sense for Mitch Marner. I mean, he could just, you referenced it just before the break, the Draisaitl McDavid comparison. He doesn't want to come in $5 million, $4 million less than Austin Matthews. And Gord Miller today on Leafs Lunch, he talked about Connor McDavid's percentage of the cap compared to the cap now. If Matthews gets the same as McDavid got, that's 13.9 per year, which seems like a lot, but it's probably pretty fair given the arc that both these guys have had early on in their careers. If he's at 14, Mitch Marner is not going to say, I want 8. I want 8.5. He's, you know, he's going to want to be in, what is it, 8 digits at that point. So I get why he's waiting, and I would wait, too, if you had that kind of game and that kind of confidence.
Well, how does this affect the trade deadline, though? Where, you know, again, Dubas was talking to LeBron earlier this season and said he'd like to kind of get have an idea of what these numbers are so that if he brings on a guy, it's not a rental. He wants to bring on some term. If you don't know what the numbers are going to be, how does it affect what the Leafs are going to do at the trade deadline?
Well, you got to be pretty good at forecasting what the numbers will end up at. Now, we saw how that played out for William Nylander. Probably not exactly where they wanted it, but, you know, you have to be pretty precise in projecting what these guys are going to end up at and then make your decisions and also then factor in whatever kind of flexibility you could have if it doesn't turn out the way you want. If you bring in a guy with term and dollars, and if it ends up being $25 million for Matthews and Marner, and that's a couple million more than you wanted, then you might have to trade people, Connor Brown, Kapanen, whoever it might be, to free up that money. But it just adds another element of the unknown into an already pretty volatile mix at the deadline. So it makes his job harder, for sure.
With Mike Johnson, do you want to join the mob and throw some takes about Nylander onto the table here, or what?
Yeah, sure. I would like to tell everyone to take a breath.
Okay.
I guess the stats aren't good, and he's paid to produce. I get that, and I'm not even saying he shouldn't get better, or he can't get better, but if you look at the things that he does well, and you look at the reason why he has been successful in the past, he's doing a lot of those similar things now. He's still generating lots of scoring chances. His lines have been dominant, or relative to his teammates, pretty good as far as the shot shares and the chances and all that stuff. He'll score. It will happen. Like Tyler Seguin, it'll happen, and it'll happen in bunches. He can get better, but he's not been nearly, in my opinion, as terrible as he's being portrayed to be, just because he hasn't scored for a while.
That sounds reasoned. I mean, I think I'm with you on that. I
told you, I'm giving him about 5 more games. It's very difficult. You missed training camp. Mike Babcock spoke to it. I'm giving him 5 more, and then it's going to be like, okay, how much time do you really need? You want the money in this town? You're not the hardest working guy in the world. So in that case, you better start putting the puck in the net.
But how many goals do you think that he is supposed to score? He's scored 20 goals a year the last 2 years.
Well, I think
you
give him a full season, Jennifer. So he's a 30-goal scorer.
But he's never done that.
Well,
like, this is the thing. Is he a 20-goal scorer who's in a slump right now? Everyone keeps waiting for him to be a 30-goal scorer, but he hasn't proven that he is that.
I think you're going on projections, though, right? You're thinking more increased ice time with Austin Matthews, possibly different situations where he's put in a position to score, and maybe he can become that. I was an 8-goal scorer, a 16-goal scorer, a 19, and then 15, and then one year you score 41. So... And I was a centerman, and I don't think they were projecting me like they were in William Nylander.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you make a good point, though. It's not like he's been a prolific goal scorer specifically. He's been an offense generator, but not necessarily goals. And, you know, the first 5-6 games, oh, this is where I'm different. I don't even give him any more time as far as having missed the first couple months. That grace period is over to me. He's been here now, what, 5 weeks? Right? 5 weeks, 6 weeks? And that's plenty of time to catch up, get your body in shape, get your mind right, settle into the new routine and rhythms of the year. I just think he's in a rut. I mean, you know, Patrick Laine is in a rut. Tyler Seguin's in a rut. But they don't happen to start a year when it happens off a protracted contract negotiation, and it's right away. Oh, you in your years where you scored 30 goals, 40 goals, you probably went times 12 games scoring one. And it felt like an eternity, but when you had so many on the front side of it and the back side of it, it all just averages out to make sense. He just, unfortunately, has had his at the front side of the year, so it looks particularly gruesome, and he has to deal with all the noise that he's hearing right now, but that's the price that you pay when you negotiate a contract in the manner he did. You play in Toronto, but I just don't think he's been as bad. I was reading some numbers. Since he started the team December 1st, whatever it was, he's got the second most individual chances generated, scoring chances. Like, he's not scoring at the rate he should, but it's not like he's not doing anything to create those chances. He just got to get a little confidence, got to get a few breaks, and then he'd have the four goals you'd expect at this point.
Don't you wish some of your coaches, Johnny, what's happened to you? Pulled you into their office and said, don't worry, Johnny, you're generating. I don't think you ever heard that. Neither did I.
I got that from my mom, Jeff. That's what, yeah, Mike, worry about not scoring. Worry about when you don't get any chances. That's what my mom used to tell me all the time. I'm like, no, Mom, I'm worried about not scoring. It's been 9 games. I feel like a dog. And I think we've seen that. I mean, they take him off Austin Matthews' line, the place where he would probably produce offense the easiest, and that probably stings a little bit to him. But I also like the fact that he uses a stick a little bit, demotes him down the lineup, but then he gives him a carrot by splitting up the power play units and getting him on the power play with Austin Matthews, a place where they were, decent at times last year, where he may be able to pick up some points, not on the second unit, but on the 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call them. So they're challenging him, and he knows it, and that's fine.
Well, now he's chasing Milan Lucic in the goals department.
Oh, boy.
Lucic pots one last night. And you would think the reaction was, it was as if it was his 500th career
Both
goal.
Both hands up in the air.
Think about this. His first goal came when?
In Europe.
Game one.
He hasn't scored in Canada this year.
It's hard to feel sorry in any way for Milan Lucic. Like, he's not a sympathetic character. He's this big, bruising, well-paid dude. I feel bad. Like, I get a point where I'm cheering for him to score. Like, I don't want to see the misery that he's going through continue, because it feels like that's what it is for him right now.
I feel that way about the entire Edmonton Oilers team right now, MJ.
It's ugly. Wow.
Their bad games are real bad.
Yeah,
they're bad. They're just bad.
Brutal. Like, yeah. they're McDavid and a bunch of
Draisaitl,
Nugent Hopkins.
And if
players.
I'm up top, if I'm an Oilers fan, I'm starting to worry about one thing. What if 97? How much longer is he going to put up with it? He's watching other guys talk about being in contention, this, that, the other. And they did make it to the conference finals one year, but how long is he going to put up with it? What if he just says, check, please?
Yeah, I mean, the luxury they have is he's got, 7 more years on his contract. So,
oh, you're right. Nobody could take that on, but
oh, people could take it on.
To being there. No, every team in the league would find a way to make that work, but...
Right.
I wonder, I know you've been around superstars, you're a star yourself. What must he be thinking when he sees Jujhar Khaira and Zach Kassian, NHLers for sure, but not players that probably maximize the amazing skill of McDavid? I wonder if he just looks at the board and be like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, that's not exactly what I was hoping for.
That's a Tuesday night at a peeler joint.
It's not the A crowd. No. Well, you know what, though?
Afternoon.
Tuesday afternoon.
With the free buffet, and it still isn't good.
I would be more disappointed if I was McDavid, if I could place myself in his shoes, that Hitchcock is using him as a prop. Like, I almost took that as a shot to the rest of the team, because the reports came out after Hitchcock, after the game in L.A., ripped into the team publicly.
They responded in Anaheim, and then they got crushed again in San Jose.
They did, but apparently he was even harsher to the team, to their faces, but challenged them for not sticking up for McDavid. And I kind of sense, after the hit from behind by Lindholm, the elbow by Doughty, Carter got him, that was almost, okay, we're going to put two big boys out beside you because the rest of the team is too soft or won't respond.
So sweet. But no one will touch them, and they'll never score.
But they'll never score. Exactly. And that's my point. If I'm McDavid, I'm like, this guy, now I'm a prop to send a message to the rest of the team.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure that's necessarily the right move, because Hitchcock, he's done it twice now. Last week, he made McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins leave the ice and made the rest of the team continue the practice.
You want to talk about a big job, though? I said it last week on my hit with Edmonton Radio, and someone tweeted it. It's like, it is a mess at Edmonton, but let's say you were brought in to fix it. What would you do?
That's
there
are
so many
question.
Holes to fill. Like, you're talking about goaltending. That decor has never been good enough, and you look about the supplemental scoring up front. You're talking about so much work to be done. Like, what kind of Shanahan plan would work in Edmonton to fix that? I don't even know. Get the best player in the world, and the rest is nonsense.
This is not a new problem, though. This has been going on for 5 years. Shirelli's been dealing with this, and he still hasn't found...
Well, two years ago, they made it to the conference finals, and everyone thought that... And Craig brought up the best point. He's like, it's not like this has been the norm. This has been the...
That's the anomaly.
The success they had. Yeah. And then it's just right back to awfulness.
Yeah. I don't know what they do. I look at that team, and... They have some contracts you can't move. I mean, you think they probably have to buy out Milan Lucic. And they got to try to hit in the draft, hope Yamamoto, guys like that, and Bouchard turn into players and try to fill from within, because you know, McDavid's turned Alex Chiesa onto like a 30-goal scorer. So I mean, he can do a lot with, you know, decently talented guys, but they got no wingers. Oh, like I'm thinking you might go back there and pot 25 playing with Drysdale because they don't have guys who can score on the wing that play on that team. I think their fifth leading goal scorer from a forward position has four goals. We're halfway through the year. In a year where offense is exploding, you got Nuge, Drysdale, McDavid, Chiesal, and then Jesse Puljujärvi's got four, and that's fifth best on the team. Can't win. Can't win playing like that, no matter how good McDavid is.
Well, and because of Edmonton, and there you can't turn your eyes away from them. I watch them all the time.
I
love watching McDavid. Like partially, I love watching McDavid. That's a big part of it. But
also the train wreck element.
Fascinated by them, and what they've done is they put up a shield based on ineptitude and losing for Ottawa. Ottawa's dead last in the league. Like all summer, we talked about, they're going to hand over the first pick. It's going to be a train wreck. They're last place. And no one's really talking about it because everyone's focused on, you know, the Leafs are always loud, Montreal's competitive all of a sudden, and Edmonton's a gong show. But Ottawa's dead last. And I kind of sense that that's where they're going.
Pending UFAs?
Exactly.
Like, can you imagine sitting in a boardroom in Edmonton and somebody pipes up and goes, we should try to tank for the first overall pick? Can you imagine?
Well,
you got to rebuild.
They won the lottery anyways. I know that much for sure.
They know how to do that. That is their comfort zone. All right, Johnny. Good talking to you, man.
All right, guys. Anytime. And Hedge, of course.
Yes.
Dude, I don't mind. You know what? Guys is cool. Guys is great. I don't feel like you need to differentiate. No, guys is fine.
I'm not doing it for you, Hedge. I think I know you well enough that you don't mind. I'm doing it for the people that would criticize me for not doing it.
Oh, well, screw
for doing
them.
It to you.
Yeah, don't worry about them.
No, guys is cool.
Just be yourself, Johnny.
All right, guys.
All right. See ya. There's Mike Johnson, TSN hockey analyst, doing the rounds. He was on the lunch today, and now he's on with us. Well, we'll see. That Edmonton team, nice trip. Like, that was a response in Anaheim, but Anaheim's, you know, they've lost eight in a row. Randy Carlyle is in big trouble. Big trouble. But they got blown out in L.A., and then they lost 7-2 last night. Erik Karlsson has an assist in 14 straight games. 14 straight.
Man, he's back to... He was bad early, man.
But they are... That team is rocking. Like, if you watched them last night, Brent Burns, he's now leading the NHL in points for a defenseman. He's passed Morgan Rielly. And then Carlson's fourth. Like, the two of them, they're both going to end up with, like, 75 points apiece.
Which is amazing, considering the start that Carlson had.
Mm-hmm. And he Burns, I don't
below,
think...
he was so average. I was watching, and I talked to some people out there, and I'm thinking...
People thought he was hurt.
Yeah, I did too. I'm like, this guy's never going to recover from that ankle injury. But I guess you just go from such a drastic change from Ottawa to San Jose. Maybe deep down he really didn't want it. And then there's that adjustment period. But, man, he's dialed in right now.
He's made the adjustment. He's in there. They're really good. I mean, there is a lot of disparity. Like, we always talk about parity comes up all the time. There really isn't that much. I think it's overstated. There's eight or nine teams. And there's, generally speaking, there's about two in each division where you really feel good about them. I think San Jose and Vegas, Calgary, full credit to them. I like Calgary, but I don't like their goaltending enough. I don't think they're going to be there in the end. Winnipeg, Nashville, Washington, Pittsburgh. I think it's a three-pack in the Maple Leaf division in the Atlantic.
The surprise sometimes is just the teams that fail, like the Chicago Blackhawks. I don't know if anyone thought the Blackhawks were going to be what they are. There's always sort of one team that sort of craps a bed, and one team that surprises you, and then other than that, it's sort of steady as she goes.
Well, you look at it, L.A. and Philly were both in the playoffs a year ago, and they're second and third last in the league. Nick Nurse will join us. The Raptors, they squeaked one out last night, but it doesn't have to be pretty every single night. They found a way to win. Kawhi Leonard, six steals, four in the fourth quarter. We'll get his take on the chemistry between Kawhi and Kyle. And there's been a lot of pieces. We referenced the Chris Mannix piece in SI, and there was a piece in ESPN a couple of weeks ago about this whole process. And Nick Nurse has been quoted throughout these pieces about his role in the courtship of Kawhi. We'll get into that and why they've been so open and honest with the media when asked about their whole role in this. So Nick Nurse, head coach of the Raptors, next. All right, we bumped Jerry's percentages. We'll start the 6 p.m. hour. some hot takes from Jerry, who has not joined us officially in 2019. Last week, we did actually have a Gmail segment where he emailed in some takes, but it didn't have the same effect. So we're looking forward to that. Nick Nurse will be calling us in just a moment. We'll catch up with the head coach of the Raps. A win is a win is a win. That's all that matters. Vince Carter was in attendance last night. He got a big standing ovation. Good for him. Raptors found a way to win. Atlanta, they are years away from competing. And Kawhi Leonard went off last night. Six steals, including four in the fourth quarter.
I want to ask the coach about load management. How we can go to our boss and say, every, what do you think, 10 days?
Well, it's back-to-backs. They got four left.
I would back-to-backs.
I will ask him that. Like, what's the point of playing him a back-to-back now? What's the point? You've got, I think they've had eight, and he hasn't played in any of them. Why would Kawhi play a back-to-back now? You're so far into the season. You've kind of made the decision. This is the route you're going to take. Unless Kawhi, like, demands it, or I'd have to look up who they're playing in the remaining four back-to-backs. If it's, like, a serious playoff-type game where you're playing whoever it is. But they just had that over the weekend. They had Milwaukee on Saturday, Indiana on Sunday. Those are the two teams that are right around them, first and third in the East. And he didn't play on the Sunday evening game. So we'll see. Nick Nurse will join us here in just a moment. Overdrive has a pair of tickets to see the Maple Leafs take on the Coyotes January 20th. Every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you will have the chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue, this Maple Leaf spent time with five NHL organizations. This Maple Leaf spent time with five NHL organizations.
Mike Johnson.
Yeah, I think you did play for about five teams. Johnny might be the guy.
Toronto, Tampa, Arizona.
Montreal. I can't remember the fifth, but I think there might be five. Anyway, Jerry's coming up just after six. The Raptors, again, with a big win last night. Whenever Hedge is in here, our next guest, he demands that he comes on the show. If Jennifer Hedger is here, Nick Nurse has got to be on the show. And it's great to have the head coach of the Raptors back on with us. How you doing, Nick?
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Nick. How's it going? great to talk to you again.
I'm doing good.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that. But watch yourself, because Hedge might hit you with a curveball, and then all of a sudden your whole attitude will change and the approach.
I'll do my Vince Carter rant on you, Nick. I'll spare you that one, okay?
I'll choke up.
See, because I was around here 15 years ago. We went through all that, and I have a long memory. So
yeah,
we'll stick to the present day stuff.
Hedge isn't the biggest Vince Carter fan, but what did you sense about the atmosphere in the house last night?
I didn't sense much, really. I think there was I did see a few jerseys and things like that, a little more than normal, obviously. And there were some people sitting pretty close to our bench that obviously bought special tickets for the game, but.
I think Vince got to Nick Nurse on his cell phone.
Apparently my pull to get Nick Nurse onto the show isn't exactly as strong as we thought.
It ends after a half an answer. After half the answer, he's like, that's enough of Hedge.
Al.
Yeah, come on, Al.
We got to get a tall guy producing the show, and then these phone calls won't plunk out on us.
Just leave my guy alone.
Sorry.
You've already broken his heart. You've shattered his soul.
Al and
poor
I are
Al.
Good.
See if we can get him on a landline, like...
A landline seems like it has to be done.
I think that would be ideal if we could, but we'll find out. We'll see if we can get the head coach.
Do you
back.
Have a landline in your house?
No, I don't.
No.
It's a totally
Nobody
hypocritical
one,
take.
I know.
Total hypocrisy. I haven't had a landline since I moved out of my parents' house
really?
12 years ago.
We do have a landline, but it's only for the telemarketers that call us.
What's the point of that?
Because
so you never answer it, though.
No, we never answer it. It's just a phone number to give when you have to give a phone number and you don't want telemarketers to call your cell phone.
Why would you ever have to give a number that you're not
Well, you know, when you're, like, filling things out and
yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
We got you, Nick?
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry about that.
No problem. Do you own a landline just out of curiosity at the house, or?
I do not.
No.
Yeah, see, nobody does.
Nobody
I do
not.
But I'm at the office and I have one on my desk.
Oh.
I've only used it, like, twice. I don't even know the number,
no.
so...
Okay.
It doesn't do as much good right now, but
All right.
Well, we're good. We'll be fine.
All right. We're all good.
I think it was a headphones issue.
We were talking about, obviously, the game last night. And Kawhi, 6 steals, 4 steals in the fourth. He had that big steal. You know, basically the final possession for you guys. And, you know, when we've been talking about Kawhi throughout the summer and leading into camp and throughout the early parts of the season, the discussion focused more on the offensive side of things and him missing so much time last year, and will he be a little bit rusty offensively. What about defensively? Were you, early in the year, concerned at all? Did you see any rust? And if so, has he officially knocked all that off?
I don't think I saw much rust defensively. I did see him possibly sitting back a little bit because I think he was trying to, you know, see physically how he would do minutes-wise, you know what I mean? So I'm not sure he was as aggressive as he can be more consistently. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but I think he's physically feeling pretty good right now. Minutes are up and all that kind of stuff, and he's playing really hard at both ends.
What goes into the decision for him resting, whether it be back-to-back? Is it a meeting with the trainers, himself, you? Who has the most impact or the most input on those decisions?
Well, I think initially we were just playing it pretty cautiously just to not get ahead of ourselves and kind of ease him back in there. We've taken most of the minute restrictions off. There was kind of all kinds of them, you know, length of each stint, total for the game, back-to-back, et cetera. So we removed most of those. And it's usually, you know, it's Alex McKechnie, the head of our sports medicine here, and Kawhi and the team doctors sit down after each game that there's a, you know, before the next back-to-back and see how we feel. Really, and go from there.
Well, when it comes to the back-to-backs, you know, I'm not saying this sarcastically at all. I think you guys have 4 left. What's the point of him playing in back-to-backs now? I mean, do you feel like you have to play him?
We're about now. We're getting to the time of the year where we're in the back end of things, and we're kind of, you know, ramping it down just to make sure we got enough left to peak for playoff time. So you're probably right. It doesn't make that much sense to me either, although I don't give it a lot of thought. I just kind of take the weeks and games as they come. That was news to me that we had 4 left. You just broke that to me right there.
Yeah, that's what you get here. This is like 60 Minutes, man. Sports Journalism 101 with Nick Nurse, head coach of the Raps. You know, we've referenced some of the media pieces that have been out. It's all about the courtship of Kawhi, and we will, I promise you, we'll move on to other players and other parts of the operation here in a moment. But I know there's a piece coming up in Sports Illustrated. Chris Mannix wrote it, and you're quoted in it. There was an ESPN piece last week or 2 weeks ago, and you were quoted in that about your role in this whole process. And you guys have been really open, you know, about everything. Was that something that you guys decided from the get-go, that if anyone's willing to ask you about the courtship, you're willing to talk about it?
I guess so. I mean, I don't really see many secrets to keep or anything to hide or anything like that. You know, for me, it's fairly simple. Like I keep saying that there's a bunch of things we know, right? There's a bunch of things we know that are kind of constant. It's an amazing city and amazing fans and a great, great organization. It gets cold here in the winter. We know all those things, right? And really my job is to let him perform at his finest and our team to have a great year and then kind of let the chips fall where they may.
With Nick Nurse, in terms of the, you know, I'm sure you saw this last night. I know you guys were busy, but it was after your game. Klay Thompson went off for 43 points last night. He dribbled the ball 4 times. 4 dribbles, yeah. 43 points. I mean, that's a lot of, you know, he's coming off screens, but a lot of just catch and shoot, and he's jacking up threes, and he can hit them. He's such a special player. But the 3-point game, you and I, we've talked about this. We all have. You guys, I believe, are top 10 in the league in 3-point attempts. You're bottom third in terms of your percentages. But I sense you're getting some really quality looks. Now, do you feel good about the amount of takes from beyond the arc? And do you feel like if you keep getting those looks, eventually the numbers will adjust?
Yeah, and I think we're trending upwards. I think we almost had nowhere to go but upwards, to be honest with you. But the looks are good. You know, we can always improve them a little bit. Maybe one more pass to go from a really good one to a great one. making sure there's not too many off the bounce. You just talked about that. The percentages are really different between catch and shoot and shooting them off the dribble. You know, the one or two guys that we have that make them off the dribble are probably Kyle and Freddie, you know. Danny makes them off the dribble now, too. So we just, you know, just again, always kind of trying to polish that up and do the little bit better look and the right guy shooting them right time. And I think we're trending upwards, and I expect us to have a few more games like we had this weekend where we made, you know, plus 40% on them.
Nick, Jonas Valanciunas is going to be out for another month, it sounds like. You guys reported today with this thumb injury. Was this worse than you expected? Do you expect him to be out this long? And are there any concerns about working him back in before you guys get to the end of the season?
That's breaking news to me as well. Oh. I think it'll be a little sooner, right? Yeah. I think we're a little ahead of schedule with him. I think it'll be a little sooner than that. I hope anyway. I know he's in a cast got off sooner. He's on the court a lot right now. He just can't take a chance with anybody kind of taking a big old whack at his thumb, you know, right now. So we're hoping. We need him, man. We've missed him.
What do you miss with him being out of the lineup?
Well, you know, we had I thought it was unfortunate the schedule we had. It seemed like we played. You know, there's not a whole ton. You know, it's not like you go up against a big brute of a center every night in this league like you used to. But we seem to see them all right in a row right after he got hurt. We went from Nurkic in Portland to Plumlee and Denver to Embiid and Philly and, I don't know, just on and on it seems. And we miss it because I think we had a nice little – well, we did. We had a great combination going where Serge could go in and kind of use his quickness and play in front and on the side and then Johnny use his strength and, you know, kind of bang him from behind. And we were kind of doing the two-man tag team on the other team's star center. And it was really, really good for us. So we missed that ability a little bit.
With Nick Nurse, head coach of the Raps, there has been some focus on the productivity of the bench. And obviously last year you were part of the staff. The Mech Mob was a big part of the narrative throughout the year and how deep the team was. And the numbers just haven't been replicated this year, although the rotations have been very different, and you've been the orchestrator of all that. But how big of a factor is the loss of Valanciunas? Kyle missed 11 games. You know, how big of an impact do the big boys have on, you know, the rest of the rotation and maybe the input and the production of the bench?
Yeah, we haven't. First of all, you're hitting it right on the nail right on the head. The bench has been an issue far, far too many times this year. I don't know. The first thing is it's been tricky with all the guys in and out. We've had some games where we've been missing up to five guys. There was just hard to get a rhythm there. The starting lineups changed a lot because of, you know, Kyle was out. Fred was even out for a while. You know, OG's had two different stints out. Etc. You know, but we got to play through it, and I think for the most part we have. You know, we just kind of put our head down and move some guys up and change some things around and survived most of it. I like what Norman Powell's done in about three out of the five games he's played. He's been awesome. Two not so good, right? Not very good at all. But again, get him to be a little bit more consistent. But I like the way he looks out there. He looks fast and strong, and et cetera. The line is finally clicking in here a little bit more consistently. And OG has had a couple good games in the last six as well. So, I don't know, just some individual guys got to play better, first of all, and they are. I think they're starting to. And then just a little bit more connection with these guys. And we're, as a staff, again, we're working hard to get them together. They've got a little more opportunity to spend time on the practice floor because they're not playing 36, 38 minutes like some of those guys. So there's days in between games, there's days of games in the morning. We're getting them in here and getting them together to try to build some rhythm.
You guys are back at it Friday night, Brooklyn in town at Scotiabank. We look forward to that. Always appreciate you finding time for us. Thank you for doing this, Nick.
No problem. Have a good evening, everybody.
You got it. There's Nick Nurse, head coach of the Raptors. Your
laid
favorite
back
guest,
dude,
Hedge.
Man.
Yeah, he's always.
I like how he's like the new Johnny Gibbons. You can just picture him sitting there talking to us. He's totally reclined in his chair at his desk and just shooting the breeze.
No one's told him Valanciunas. There was an update on him. No idea.
No idea about the back-to-backs.
No.
Whatever. It's all good. We're just rolling with it, man.
Yeah, just looking at the next game.
Rolling with the punches.
I think sometimes coaches come across like that during an interview, but you talk to any coach, every day is just stress. And every win, every loss, it's just...
They live and die.
The best example is NHL coaches. You just look at their hair color from when they start. They go gray faster than any other human being on Earth. It's just gray. It's a gray fest.
It's like Barack Obama when you saw him at his inauguration and then when he was finished being the president.
That is the most egregious split screen.
Yeah.
Like to look at him. Now it's 8 years. 8 years is a long time.
And 8 years during what was that, his mid-40s to, was it his early 40s to 50 type thing?
I think he was, he would have been, I don't know how old he was. He was in his 40s when he definitely, when he got into the White House. But complete transformation.
Yeah.
Like he was in his prime in 08 when he got in. When he left in 16, he was a different man. He was a grizzled vet. Although Donnie Trump, it's like the same guy.
Yellow. Comb over.
Trump hasn't moved. It hasn't changed. Nothing's changed. Jerry's percentages. We had to move Jerry back because Nick Nurse was calling in.
How was Jerry with that? Is he okay with getting moved back?
Not generally. No.
He's going to be a little extra cranky.
Yeah, I think he's probably got a statement, I would think.
Probably.
We'll see. So we'll get to Jerry at around 6 o'clock. All right, Jerry's percentages in about 10 minutes. Sean Payton gearing up, getting hyped for this weekend. The Saints are at home against the Eagles.
Wheeled in the trophy.
You hear about that move?
$250,000 of cash underneath it.
Instead, if you want it, win three more games. Because I guess each individual player, if you win a Super Bowl, I think it's $225,000 cash. That's your bonus. It's motivation. Forget the trophy. Give me the cash. And a ring on top of it that's probably valued at $50,000.
I think it's only motivation for the guys that aren't making a ton of cake.
Drew Brees would rather the ring. You know, he would pay $225,000 to guarantee the Super Bowl. But, yeah, you're right. If you're the backup left guard, if I get in, I am balling for $225,000. All right, Jerry's percentages. We'll get back into what happened at Leaf practice today. Updates on Freddie Anderson, where William Nylander could be playing tomorrow night. And we get back into this Machado-Harper stuff, how no teams appear to be kicking tires, and they're 26 in superstars. Why aren't the Jays at least contemplating one of these moves? Hedges in here, the O-Dog. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.